Yes, it's the last guest of the week here on World Football Daily, and what a treat we have for you. A very good friend of the show, one of our favourite lads to get on World Football Daily. It is, of course, the man who knows all European football inside out on the back of his hand, Mr. Andy Brassel, joining us here on World Football Daily. Andy, how are you, mate? A happy new year.
I'm well. Happy New Year to you. How are you, Ollie?
We are all very well here. I'm doing very well indeed. A little bit tired from the last few days, although I'm sure it's been a lot more tiring for you, mate. How has the transfer week been this week?
Well, you know, it's all the anticipation rather than the event itself. I think there are a few sort of interesting storylines. Of course, like, it's slightly coloured by the fact that there's really not that much money knocking around at the moment. So I think a couple of clubs did pretty good business anyway. I think it's another poke in the eye for those who say you can't get value in January, because you really can if you're prepared to work hard enough.
One of the biggest value deals that I thought coming out of yesterday was Stoke City picking up Jack Butland for a little over 3.5 million. What do you make of this move in terms of the player's sensibility to decline talking with Chelsea and instead go to Stoke with this half-season loan deal back at Birmingham City?
Well, I think it tells us about one next move, i.e. Asmir Begovic is going to be off somewhere in the summer. I think that's pretty clear, otherwise Butland wouldn't have signed. But, you know, he's someone who's always been sort of pretty down to earth, pretty grounded. Before he started playing for the Birmingham first team, when he was on loan at Cheltenham in League Two last season, before Euro 2012, when he was out injured for one of the games, he was like behind the goal with the fans, like having a pie and watching the game. You know, he's very, very normal, likeable character, really. And I think that's an especially good temperament quality in a goalkeeper. He's come a long way, but he's obviously aware that he's so young as a goalkeeper that he's developing. Stoke have done very well, you're right, to get this deal, but of course it's a deal that, you know, would have cost twice as much, maybe more, last summer. And that's, I guess, what I'm talking about when I say there is value to be had during the transfer window, because it's not just the fact that clubs are buying. Some clubs really, really need to sell. And, you know, Birmingham are in a terrible state now with what's happened with the Carson Young regime, so they really needed to get some money in. I expect they were cursing, particularly when Butland originally turned down Chelsea, because you know, they thought they had the deal in the bag and they really needed to sell before the end of the window to keep going. So it just happened in the nick of time for them.
One side that did end up throwing a fair bit of money around in Europe was Ante, getting rid of Crispus Samba, of course, but bringing in Willian from Shakhtar for around £34 million, we're hearing. What have you made of this move? Because it doesn't seem like a progressive move forward for Willian's career.
Well, he must have got one hell of a project brief. That's all I can say, because he's earning pretty well at Shakhtar. And, you know, you look at the players that are there, Brazilian players who've been there so long. You look at Fernandinho, who's been there nearly 8 years now. And Ilsenio is another example. Dario Sierna, of course. And, you know, they're players who buy into the Shakhtar philosophy, but they stay because they're treated really well and because they're paid really well. And I think he'll find it a bit of a leap, A, because there's going to be a lot of pressure at Ange to go a long way very, very quickly. B, he's stepping into a club that has high expectations, but, you know, knows nothing about the Champions League, has never been in it. And see, he doesn't have that sort of collection of Brazilian players, that little Brazilian community there. They're sort of shielded from the rest of of Ukraine a little bit at Shakhtar, because I remember talking to Fernandinho before the Chelsea game in the Champions League, before the first Chelsea game, and I said to him, just out of interest, if you were advising Chelsea fans who were coming to Donetsk, apart from the Donbass Arena, what would you say was the thing you absolutely have to see, or a couple of things that you absolutely have to see as a tourist in Donetsk? And he's like, well, I don't know. I never go into town. I couldn't tell you. And I thought that was an extraordinary thing to come out for somebody who'd been there like seven and a half years. And, you know, it's because they just live in this little cocoon, really. And, you know, it's very successful for the club and it's very successful for the players. But I'm wondering if Willian will find things a little harsh, a little difficult out of that. And I'd be really interested to know what his motivation was, because, like I said, it can't just be money, because players already earn very well at Shakhtar. And, you know, given that he'd said to Luchescu before, and this is what Luchescu was saying after their friendly against CSKA on Thursday, that he couldn't really understand. Like, you know, he knew Willian wanted to go on and test himself somewhere else, in like a more mediatastic league. So for then him to turn around and sign for Angie, having expressed this desire to maybe go to the English Premier League, was a real surprise to him, and I think it's a real surprise to a lot of people.
What have you made of the Angie project, Andy? Because there was so much worry when Eto went there that they would start buying all of the world's talent and building this supreme side there. And it's not happened at all. They've not achieved the heights that many of us were kind of expecting from outside of Russia.
Well, I think they've progressed a long way really quickly. I think a lot of people wondered whether it would gel as a team. But if you think about it, they're in second place in the Russian Premier League, which is a really, really strong league. They had a really strong champion in Zenit. It has the Moscow clubs that spend a heck of a lot of cash themselves. You know, you talk about players going places for money. You know, if we go back a couple of years, we look at Kevin Karanyi going to Dinamo Moscow, who aren't even the top Moscow club. They also spent on Balázs Zsuzsák when the Hungarian winger, when it didn't work out for him. Angie, you know, there are players over there earning very, very good cash. You know, look at Aidan McGeady since he went over to Spartak a couple of years ago. And he signed on the line for, what, 70 grand a week and two personal chefs. I mean, you know, this is something that I think will increasingly become a problem for the Premier League. Maybe it will change a little bit if they're prepared to push the contracts up even further next year, when the bigger TV deal kicks in, the bigger domestic TV deal in the English Premier League kicks in. But, you know, you look at this transfer window and you look at the fact that Rubin Kazan have managed to outbid QPR on Yanan Villa, and, you know, no one needs to tell him what crazy sums in terms of salary QPR are spending on players. So, you know, this is a serious, serious football landscape. And, you know, even though Angie have spent money, they've bought quite wisely as well. You know, they've bought these flagships like Eto, like Roberto Carlos, who, of course, is part of the club management now. But I think, you know, there have been some really smart signings like Mbak Boussafa, the Moroccan winger, like Christopher Samba, who, you know, they've not lost anything on, although they're a little bit knocked that he left. And they, you know, Lassina Traore, I think, is another great example. Arsenal were tracking him for quite a while before he went to Russia with Kuban Krasnodar originally, before Angie snapped him up. And, you know, I think if you see their performances in the Europa League, they're definitely building something. But I think as time goes on, Russia will be increasing, the Russian Premier League will be increasingly hard to buy. I don't see a situation happening like Blackburn in the Premier League in the mid-90s, where you can throw even a couple of hundred million at a club and get them to win the Russian Premier League. It's just not going to work like that. So I think for them, it's just as important to get the infrastructure right, because long term, that's what's going to persuade players to keep coming, because they're in a strange situation at the moment. You know, they're based in Dagestan, which has obviously got its political challenges. So the players train all week in Moscow, they live in Moscow, then they fly an hour and a half to Makakala to come out and play the games at the weekend. It's a far from ideal situation. And when they play at Europe, you know, they're all away games, because they have to play at the Lokomotive Stadium in Moscow. Well, the Lokomotive Stadium is the one they've been playing at. Maybe they'll upscale to the Luzhniki if they get bigger tires, but, you know, that remains to be seen. So for them, I think they've done pretty well in terms of even convincing some of the big names to get involved. But I think not much has been said really about how they're making those changes to make it a solid project, to give something back to the community, the indigenous community which they're from, which is something that they're limited in their ability to do at the moment for really non-football reasons.
Andy, you're a big fan of French football. We've seen you reporting and covering a lot of French football, mate. What do you make of PSG and the arrival of David Beckham yesterday? A mixed reception in the French press for Golden Balls.
Yes. Well, the thing is, I know it's very easy for people to be cynical about Beckham, and a lot of people are, but I don't really see who loses from this, to be honest. Ultimately, you get in a situation where, because of Beckham, you have this incredibly rich football club giving basically $100k a week to charity for the next 5 or 6 months at least. And that is no bad thing by any stretch of the imagination. I think as far as the French league goes, I think obviously it makes it very marketable. I saw them having a discussion about it on French telly last night, actually, and one of the pundits was saying, well, of course, the big difference between, say, Beckham and Zlatan, because they were talking a lot about the relationship between those two, is that Beckham is a star without the football. And so, to an extent, what he does or doesn't do on the pitch or how much he plays is neither here nor there. However, what I've always thought about Beckham is there are so few people, unfortunately, capable of judging him for what he is as a footballer, because he's just such an incredibly all-encompassing media personality. I often think, I remember saying to a friend, if, for example, if you suspend disbelief for a moment and say Paul Scholes got married to Victoria Adams out of the Spice Girls and David Beckham just married the girl next door, I wonder how differently they would have panned out, because, you know, Scholes had the skill of a Xavi or an Iniesta, or that sort of level, and you can tell that by the respect that those guys out there in Barcelona and Madrid have for him. You know, they always talk about Scholes. Footballers all over Europe always talk about Scholes, but of course, you know, he keeps it on the D-lo. That's his whole thing. Whereas Beckham is not judged on his football at all. Well, really, he's the sort of footballer, Beckham, that the English really, really love, because he's made the absolute most of the talent that he's got. He works so incredibly hard. He runs like a dog. If he was playing for your team, why wouldn't you love him? And, you know, I think someone who is a real football guy, because he doesn't need to still do it, really, to a large extent, he's holding himself up to possible ridicule, to people saying, oh, you're too old, they're only buying you because they're only signing you on because you know, you're a personality and you're going to sell shirts and all the rest of it. But he absolutely loves football, and I think that's something that the rest of the squad will really get off of him. And I think when you look at Zlatan and the sort of leadership role that he's taken at PSG this season, and, you know, he's someone who's, you know, by his own admission, made mistakes in the past. He's someone who has been a little bit impetuous. He's really grown into something else this year. He's been terrific with the media. He's been terrific with his teammates. They all really look to him. Now, it's something that PSG have lacked in the QSI, the Qatari era. The fact that they've had lots of good players, but very few leaders on the pitch. And Ancelotti talked about this before the start of the season. He was like, who do you make the captain? And he wondered out loud, is it Sacco? Well, I don't really trust him and I don't want to play him every game. In terms of his footballing ability, could it be Menez? Well, maybe it could be Menez, but he gets booked 12 times a season, so I don't really want that. And so he needs someone who radiates that sort of calm in the dressing room, who's been there and won stuff and can cope with big club pressure. And on the playing side, to finish off, I think the fact that Beckham can do that reduced role, and so he can step in for Verratti, who started the season very, very well, but of course is still very young and his form's been a little bit up and down since Christmas. I think that could be a really real help for him as well, and of course he's still learning the game.
It's a great person to learn off as well, a guy that's been there, done that, David Beckham, and been all over the place learning the different styles of football. It'd be wonderful for Verratti to learn from. What about the chap coming out of PSG and going to Fiorentina, Mohamed Sissoko? This is a great move for him in terms of getting back on the pitch and getting some game time. Do you think he's going to see a lot of game time in Serie A?
I think he might do. They haven't really got a midfielder like him, and that's been a problem for them, really, that they've collected a lot of these shuttling midfielders who run the ball from their own half into the offensive phase of the pitch. And You know, they've become a little bit one-paced, I think, in recent weeks. And, you know, they've run aground. And the football they played in the first half of the season, it would be great if Fiorentina got into Europe. But I think that lack of variation in midfield has really started to cost them. You know, on the attacking side, they haven't found a way really to incorporate Matty Fernandez, who's more the number 10 sort of playmaker type. And, you know, they haven't had that one person to put the foot in at the other end. Now, of course, Sissoko, A, is that person, and B, has actual proper experience of Serie A, which I think is very important. I've got the impression that Ligue 1 was obviously been out injured for a while, was just a little bit too fast for him. Now, of course, you know, Serie A is not the paint by numbers that his critics would say, but it's not quite as fast, not quite as physical as Ligue 1, and I think that might make a difference for Sissoko, because his problem was even when he got playing, he was just he seemed half a yard off the pace, and he just snaps into the tackle far too hard. So you're looking at a guy who was a walking yellow card, and Ancelotti stood up for him all the time when he copped daft cards and when he got sent off and all the rest of it. And I think two things have really pushed Sissoko out. One, the fact that the improvement of Blaise Matuidi has been absolutely extraordinary this season. He's probably been PSG's best player apart from Zlatan, and you have to have, like, you know, a Zlatan handicap. He's on a completely different level. So you take him away for a minute, and Matuidi's been the best of the rest. He's been absolutely terrific. His passing's really improved. He's worked at the technical side of his game. Whereas I think Sissoko's still got the energy, but he's not quite got the finesse even that he had in the past. And I think that's only going to really come through playing games. But I feel quite confident he can do that for Fiorentina.
It'll be interesting to see how he does adapt, as you say, to the slightly slower pace of Serie A. Andy, there have been so many moves going around yesterday all over Europe. Who, though, in this January transfer window, of all the clubs that you can think of, has really improved themselves significantly? Who's had the best January out of all of us?
I think the obvious ones, Galatasaray, because... Mm. I think you can say Snyder's been out of nick for the past 2 years, and you'd be right. But I think that's not entirely his fault. I think that's partly due to the profound changes that have been there in a coaching and structural sense since Mourinho left. And also, like the fact that you're getting Snyder and Didier Drogba, two players of that quality, who've still got something to do, who've still got something in the tank, who aren't cup-tied for the Champions League, and are going to go into this last 16 game against Schalke, which, you know, they probably would have quite fancied before, let's be honest. Really, it's all down to how Turin can make it work with Snyder in it, because he can't play 4-4-2 anymore. He just can't do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a really smart coach. Snyder said he was one of the reasons he signed. Of course, you could argue he was backed into a corner to a certain extent by what was going on at Inter. But nevertheless, I think playing with Turin is a big pull that not really a lot of people have mentioned so far. So I think it's a big challenge for him. But, you know, Turin's a coach that's really committed to attacking. So it's going to suit both of those players. And I'm really interested to see how they go in the Champions League for the rest of this season. I suppose in the English Premier League, it's got to be Newcastle. I went to see them at Aston Villa on Tuesday. And, you talk about there being an element of risk from players you sign in January as well. And especially clubs in trouble, they have to take a punt. And, you know, you look at QPR, they've got Loic Remy on board, who had a terrible 2012. They were trying to get Yann and Villa on board, and, you know, we know what personal difficulties he's had, as well as his form on the pitch has not been what it should be. But if you look at the way Moussa Sissoko started for Newcastle, if you look at the way Yann Gouffran started for Newcastle, he got through a hell of a lot of work in that game at Aston Villa. They've signed players not only who are cheap, not only who have great resale value, not only who are young and fit and really suited to the Premier League and will be good for them for years to come and all that sort of stuff, but players who are in form right now. Gouffran has had the season of his life with Bordeaux. He was excellent last season as well, so he's coming in there full of confidence. If you look at Moussa Sissoko, he's been absolutely outstanding for Toulouse this year. He's been great for the French national team, and he's become a key part of that. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why Mvila and Toulalan and, you know, a couple of other players haven't been able to get into the midfield picture, because Kapu and especially Sissoko have really stepped up and made those midfield berths their own. So I think to be able to do that, you know, I don't buy into this thing that Newcastle have got a genius scouting network. I just think they play it safe and play it well. And it says a lot how other people's scouting is maybe not what it should be. But nevertheless, they're really, really solid buyers. And I think they'll stand them really good, not just for the rest of this season, but for next season too.
There's a touch of the French definitely on Tyneside, that's for sure. Andy, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show again, mate. Always a top chance to speak with you. And we look forward to getting you back on as soon as possible, mate. Enjoy the weekend's football.
Great stuff. You too. Take care.
Take care, Andy. Andy Brassel there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about the transfer window and how it's been received all around Europe. Of course, Andy, a big fan of French football, and he will apparently be watching tonight as PSG in the Friday game in Ligue 1 take on Toulouse this evening. When we come back from the break, we're going to have all of the games that you need to be watching this weekend, plus our final thoughts on what was a pretty tame deadline day overall. Thank goodness for Peter Odemwenge. We'll be back in just a minute.